Welcome to Life Skills for Kids, Superstar Practical Strategies, your go-to podcast for surviving and thriving with your children. I'm your host, Deb Hopper, and as a parent and an occupational therapist, I understand the reality of getting through each day with the kids. Join me now as we delve into tips, tricks, and strategies that you can use today. Well, hello and welcome to the Life Skills for Kids podcast. I'm here with Dr. Claire Rubman, and she is our guest all the way from New York. So welcome, Claire. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
So we are here to talk to Claire about her new book. The book is called This May Be Difficult to Read, But You Really Should for Your Child's Sake. We were just chatting before the show and I can't remember exactly how I came across the book, but yeah, thank you, Dr. Rubman, for coming here on the show. So let's start with a question about, you know, why did you read the book and why are kids struggling to read?
Well, again, thank you for having me. So I'm a college professor and I have a wide range of students in my college classroom, but I've seen what failure in the college classroom looks like. And if you work it backwards, I started to wonder, where does it all go wrong? Because some students succeed and some students fail. Way back, I think in a former life, I used to be a kindergarten teacher. And I used to ask the same question back then. How is it that some children figure out reading and other children don't? And so there's 50 years of research that shows us exactly what children do, what they do correctly, what they do incorrectly, what they're missing, what they need. And yet none of that research seems to be readily available to parents. Parents don't seem to know about it. For good teachers, the book is validation, but for parents, it's oftentimes new information. And so I wanted to share the research with parents. It's not necessarily my research, some of it is, but most of it is other people's research, really spanning 50 years. And it's time. It's time we shared the wealth, we shared the knowledge, and we encouraged children to do a better job. Because right now, 1 in 5 college freshmen in the United States has to take a remedial reading class, and 42 million Americans can't read the directions and follow them on a can of soup. In fact, there was just an article in the New York Times this week that 2/3 of fourth graders can't read at a proficient level. These are staggering numbers. And so why is that happening? And let's fix it.
Oh, and I totally agree. As an OT, I see kids come through our clinic and, you know, just in the last couple, you know, month, I've had, you know, kids in upper primary school and in high school here. So that's, you know, years, you know, 4 to 7, and they're really struggling with reading and especially writing, like we're going back to the kindergarten year one level. So it's definitely an issue, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, children are endowed with amazing memories. And so it's like a silent problem, because in the early years, they can kind of get away with just remembering things by rote. And so we don't necessarily notice they're not understanding what they're reading. And children are very smart. I mean, they can find great ways to camouflage their lack of comprehension skills. But honestly, there's so much that we could do to help them. It's such a shame that we don't. And, you know, parents, bless them. It's really hard to be a parent and it's really hard to be a teacher, but to be a parent and your child's first teacher, it's a lot to ask. And so really the book, This May Be Difficult to Read, it's designed to help parents, to show them how to just tweak how they live their lives without adding more to their stressful routine, but how to tweak their lives so that reading is a natural part of life. Just like speaking and listening is a natural part of life, reading and reading comprehension can easily be slotted in there so that children naturally pick up these skills. And really that's what the book's about. It's about encouraging parents not to give up hope and to enjoy the process, because having children ought to be fun. Raising children and reading books ought to be such a wonderful experience. And it's really sad that, you know, I have a friend that she told me, I'm glad she's not listening, or maybe she is listening, but she told me that her granddaughter comes over every Tuesday, and Tuesday is reading homework night. And so she has to read 10 pages of reading homework. So she goes to find the book with the biggest print and the biggest pictures. So she has the least amount to read. And of course, my friend's telling me this, and all I can think is, oh, that's terrible. How did that go so terribly wrong? I mean, we ought to love reading, especially a granddaughter with a grandmother. That ought to be like the greatest privilege. And so we need to fix that. We really do. It needs to be fun again.
Absolutely. And there are such amazing kids' books out there. Like, I don't think there's been a time in history where there hasn't been such a breadth of topics and, you know, gorgeous picture books and amazing chapter books. Do we just need to go to the library, or
One of the suggestions in the book, you're right, I mean, there are phenomenal books out there, but another suggestion is make your own picture books. You know, most people have phones with cameras on them. Keep it really simple. And when you print out the pictures or you put them on the screen, put one word on each page. And one of the reasons that children fail in terms of reading comprehension, they don't realize how much information they have to bring with them to a story. But if you create the story and they feature in the story, then they begin to realize and you can point it out to them. And in actual fact, that's one of the, I put 15 research studies in the textbook that parents can actually do themselves as they read the book. So one of them shows parents what it's like to read a story if you're missing the background knowledge. And that's oftentimes what happens with children. They've got limited experiences, and we call it schematic knowledge. They've got limited schematic knowledge. But if we show them in a picture book that we made with them, look, here's you in the story, and we show them, look how much information you're bringing with you to the story. We have to do that with every story. So it's a great starting point, because some of the research actually says, if you just tell children they need to do that, oftentimes they'll do it, because reading is an active process, not a passive one. And we do spend a lot of time, maybe just in the United States, I don't know, but we do spend a lot of time watching television, which is a passive activity. But in order to read and comprehend successfully, it has to be active. It has to be an active process. And so we have to encourage children to do that.
And it's not just in the US, I tell you. And I think TV is one of the lesser evils, you know, being on the screen and having that, and that's a different conversation, having that interaction time and that swiping over and over. It's a whole other issue. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It is. So how do we get around, you know, knowing what we do and don't know about reading? I guess, you know, reading your book is a great first step.
Well, I would certainly advocate that. I mean, the first problem is we have to learn to think as a child thinks. I mean, Piaget told us this in the 1950s. I mean, Jean Piaget said, you know, children aren't like us. They're completely different. They're not miniature adults. The way they think and process information is completely different from the way we think and process information. So that's what I tried to lay out in chapters in the book. How is it that children think? So, I mean, there's so much that we know, but we don't necessarily apply. So for instance, I remember when one of my sons was very little, I let him go into the bakery for the very first time on his own to go and buy a loaf of bread. And I gave him a $5 bill. And he was so excited because he came back with the bread and monies. They gave him more monies than he had given them. And yeah. So he didn't understand the concept that three $1 bills was less than one $5 bill. And, you know, Piaget's been telling us that since way back in the 50s, and yet we don't necessarily apply it to our lives with our children. And the same thing is true with reading. Children read differently than adults. They have a limited cognitive load, and so it takes them most of their time just to get the words out. And so there are 10 myths at the beginning of the book, and one of the myths, or facts or myths, you have to decide for yourself, one of the facts or myths would be, is it okay for you to read to your child rather than your child reading to you? Because so many people, especially my friend that I alluded to before, who insisted that her granddaughter read to her, we mistakenly believe that it's only reading if the children do it themselves. And so if we take the pressure off them and we do the reading, they can do more of the comprehending, which is such a vital part of the reading process. So these are things that we can focus on, definitely, you know, when we try to encourage children to read.
Absolutely. And I guess from a rewards perspective in the classroom and for homework, kids get the praise, don't they, when they can say the words. We don't give the praise for naturally for when they, you know, tell us, you know, the comprehension of the story.
Right, absolutely. You know, I think, unfortunately, reading has become synonymous with decoding. And so we have programs like Hooked on Phonics, and we're so proud of our children when they say the words out loud. And there's a little story in the book about a little boy who came over to visit my other son, not the same son, a different son, years and years ago. And we had a water cooler in the house, and everything in my house used to be labeled so that the children could pick up sight words. Recognition. And so the water cooler had a hot tap and a cold tap, and the hot tap said hot because it's a phonetically friendly word, hot, hot. So the little boy, who was very proud of himself and could read everything in sight, said to my son, I know what that says, it says hot. And he put his hand on the water cooler and tried to turn the tap on. And of course, my son, who couldn't read for peanuts, took the other little boy's hand off the cooler and said, yes, it's hot, you're going to burn yourself. And it really, I mean, it's such a beautiful example of there's no point in reading if you don't know what you're reading. And if you can comprehend, that's great, but you have to be able to comprehend the printed word. And so the two of them between them managed to read.
The two brains together made one.
Yes, indeed.
Yep, yep. I love that story. And that story is in the book too.
Yeah. It's this idea that we need to create a need to read in our homes. And so there has to be a point in reading. You know, there's another myth that earlier is better. We're great believers as human beings that if there are child prodigies out there, it must be something really special. And sure, I mean, it must be wonderful to be a child, dysfunctional, but still wonderful to be a child prodigy. But this idea that reading earlier is better, if you don't have enough background knowledge, there's a limited amount you can read. I mean, infants don't make their own formula. They don't cook dinner. And so what is it that we want them to read exactly? And so we have to create a need for them to read so that they want to and they're able to. And when we do that, it fits naturally into our lives. So if we think of all the things that we do, like we go to the supermarket, we go shopping, we can make a list of what we need. We can draw pictures. And so we can include our children in how we naturally read. And Albert Bandura said that children learn by observation. Observational learning is a big thing with children. So we need to model the behaviors that we want our children to emulate. So if we sit around the table playing on our phones or playing video games, that's possibly what our children are going to copy. But if we sit reading a book, we read the newspaper, we talk about current events, we discuss books and chapters that we're reading, that's what our children might possibly copy. And so we have to be leaders in order for them to follow.
Absolutely. And that reminds me of a story from my family. When my kids were younger, like I have a Kindle. And so I was mindful of actually picking up physical books when they were younger, because it just looked like I was on another screen to them.
Exactly. You know, and that goes back to the idea of thinking as a child thinks. You know, because they think differently than us, the book goes into great detail about how their brains are different from ours and how the brain matures. You know, 75% of the brain weight is formed by the time a child is age two. That doesn't mean that they're going to be gifted and talented by the time they're two, but nonetheless, the neurons are forming, the neural pathways are forming. And so we want to go out and do things with our children, jump in puddles, pick up leaves. You know, it doesn't have to be anything outrageous, but whatever we do with our children, we need to also find books that have stories that relate to those events, so that children from the earliest age begin to make those connections. And as we see how children think and we learn how children think, so we can teach them to read from their perspective instead of from ours, because oftentimes it's so natural for us to read, we do it instinctively, and oftentimes we forget how hard it is for children to actually follow a story and actually comprehend what's going on.
This is a bit off track, but what's your perspective of kids listening to like talking books?
So I'm in favor of anything that's book related. Part of the problem with talking books, then we have to rely on listening rather than actually seeing the printed word. So assuming that children have normal hearing, you know, a normal range of hearing, great, go for it. That's what happens when parents read anyway. But, you know, there are some devices out there that seem to replace parents. I'm in favor of parents and really any adult reading with a child, because it's a shared interaction. that creates something really magical. And if you leave a child alone listening to a recording, yeah, you know, that's fine. But so much more is created when grown-ups and children be together, whether it's grandparents and grandchildren, parents and children, siblings. Everybody should read to everybody.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because you've got that attachment factor, don't you? Like, it's that they look up to us as adults. They love to be with us, especially when they're younger. Teens are a bit different.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. It's not just the words on the page, but if you read with your child, you have a shared experience. And so you can bring more to the story than a, you know, a tape recorder or a stranger. Yeah. And so that's what builds a whole world for children and creates that excitement. And we used to have a toy. I don't know if they still have it. I don't think they have it in this country, but in Scotland, where I grew up, we used to have a toy called Fuzzy Felts. There was little felt characters and you stick them on a board. Yes. I mean, that's a storyboard. Building a story with a child and taking a story that you've just read and building the pictures, that's an incredible activity because that shows a child, listen, you have to pay attention to what's going on. And then we call it proposition integration. You have to integrate or combine the ideas in the story to see what's going to happen next. And if we can do it with our children, we talk about overt and covert thinking. And so really reading is covert. We don't see it, it's covered. But if we can make the process overt and just draw pictures or use fuzzy felts or whatever we happen to use, then children get to see what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I love the fuzzy felts, and I love, you know, those sticker books where you have like a, you know, a farmyard scene, like just in random stickers, and you can, you know, put the scene together and you can, they can tell their story. Yeah, lots of those preschool resources are really, really fun. So I'm just looking here at some of the other, you know, fact or myths in your book. So is it cheating to tell your child the words that they get stuck on?
I feel like if we discuss all the facts and myths, it won't be as fun to read them.
Let me do that one.
I mean, there's no such thing as cheating in reading. I mean, if children are frustrated and they don't know what the word is, tell them what the word is. And there's another myth about pictures. You know, is it cheating to look at the pictures? No, of course not. Think about what we as adults do. If we can't remember what's going on in a book, sometimes we check the title or sometimes we check the front cover. In fact, how do you choose a book? You go to the bookstore or you look on, you know, online, and how do you decide what you want to read? Oftentimes the picture makes you decide, oh, no, that's not for me. Or, oh, I think I want to read that one. Children do the same thing. They get clues from the pictures, and we want to teach them to actually do that.
Absolutely. Great. So we've talked about a few different ideas, but what are your top one or two tips to make reading fun and to introduce reading more into the family routine?
Absolutely. So there's so many different things that we can do that are just so much fun. So I used to put everybody's names on place cards, and then it was the children's job to put the names around the table. We have a big family. So if they didn't want to sit next to somebody, they had to figure out what the name was. We started with that, and then we would put different words, only phonetically friendly words. So rug, not door, because that one does doer, that one doesn't work. But phonetically friendly words, put them on cards and play games. Make it fun so that some words you recognize by sight. Make up a list for the supermarket with pictures. Always make everything so that your child can succeed, because that makes it fun and exciting and they'll want to do it again. But I used to give the children flashcards, and so they would go to the supermarket and it'd be their job to find the milk or an egg. And so, you know, they'd be able to do that on their own and bring it back to the cart. So they would have fun and be successful with that. Anything that encourages a purpose for reading, I would put little notes under their pillow so that when they went to bed, they'd find the note. And just something really simple with pictures too, so that they could figure out what it said. Sometimes it would just be a little hand waving and, you know, it would just be a simple little message. As they get older, put a little note in their lunchbox so that they can try and figure out what it says. But keep it simple and make it successful for them. And you can use, you know, pictures. So, you know, you can cut them out with magazines or you can take photographs so that they know what's going on. And there are fabulous games out there. There's a game called Zingo. It's bingo, but it's pictures and words. And children love playing it. It helps them learn, you know, just a few sight words, and it makes it fun for them because they can be successful. Also, I guess because I live far away from my family, we always used to write home to grandma and grandpa or to cousins or aunts and uncles. And just writing a simple word on a picture or two simple words on a picture. And then grandma or grandpa would call and say, oh, I got your picture. And so they would understand that by writing it, it had meaning for somebody else. And so anything that encourages, you know, the printed word and encourages meaning and access to that meaning would be great.
Yeah, fantastic. They are really good ideas. And I'm going to check out that Zynga game because I have not seen that idea.
You can even make, I mean, no disrespect to the makers, but you can make it. I mean, put pictures of the family, put pictures of things around your house and have fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. So where can people find you, Dr. Claire?
So I have a website. It's difficult to read with the number two, difficulttoread.com. That's my website. Or you can find the book at Amazon or at Barnes & Noble.
Fantastic. And I really recommend it. I got it on Kindle and it's great. It's back to basics, really, I think, which I think we need to do. And I just love the research and how and the activities throughout it. It was so good. A therapist, but also as a parent. So we will put those contact details in our show notes as well and link to the Amazon book. So thank you so much, Dr. Robin, for coming onto our podcast here at Life Skills for Kids.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on the Life Skills for Kids podcast, giving you superstar parenting tips so you can be the rock in your child's life. Do you have an anxious child and do you feel overwhelmed and unsure how to help them? Check out my book, Teaching Kids to Manage Anxiety, Superstar Practical Strategies, to help your anxious child move from fear and worry to confidence and peace. I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. The information we discussed today was just that, information only. It is not specific advice. If you take action following something you heard today, it's important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that advice be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to me if you have any questions or if there's another topic you'd like explored. And if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them or suggest my Instagram, Facebook, or Life Skills for Kids website. Thank you.